Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we're going to have fellowship on the air, if you will, with Dr. Peter Lilback. He is the founder and director of Providence Forum, providenceforum.org. He and I wrote a big, thick book on the faith of George Washington called George Washington's Sacred Fire. And when George Washington was retiring in 1796, he delivered the farewell address. It's my understanding, by the way, that this was distributed primarily through the newspapers, but he made some interesting remarks in that farewell address, and we're going to talk about some of that with Dr. Lilback. Dr. Lilback, welcome back to the program. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jerry. What a wonderful privilege to be with you again.
Sure. Okay, so George Washington obviously had a very distinguished life of service to his country, and he gave us a lengthy goodbye. And it's a very good speech, the farewell address of 1796. It's worth Americans rediscovering it and rereading it. And go ahead and comment on it in general, and we can, you know, deal with some of the issues like related to religion and morality later.
That's good. Well, first of all, I agree with you. It was published in a newspaper. It's actually the second attempt at a farewell address. He wanted to leave at the end of his first term, but he realized there was too much on the line of a new nation, so he stayed. There was a first attempt, but this is the one that really holds, and it becomes official. And if anyone would like to study it with care, on our Providence Forum website, we have a place where you can look at the farewell address with it being outlined and analyzed. So if you want, after this program, that would be a good place to go. Huh. But its basic concern is realizing that Washington, who is already in his lifetime, was called the father of his nation. He was the one who had unanimously been elected to presidency twice, and he's now leaving. And he realizes the Constitution that he'd helped to craft, and now to bring it into reality, is going to have to endure the transfer of power through an election to someone else, and there will be contested elections, which means that the unity that he was able to bring is now going to evaporate. There's going to be political rivalry. And so Washington is trying to give to the nation at a very vulnerable point as it's passing the baton to the next generation of leaders. How are you going to keep this American experiment intact without it flying to pieces through partisan politics? So what's at the core of Washington's message is, how do we preserve this union? All these different states, one federal government, how do we stay together under the Constitution? So it's unity. Two, it's the Constitution's message of governing that's going to keep it together. Three, he's going to warn how sectional interests and rivalries will have centrifugal forces that will pull everybody in different directions, and how we need to make sure that these issues of local, selfish, partisan interests do not allow the country to fly into smithereens.
This is so relevant.
With the country. It's absolutely relevant. And then he goes on from there to say, you have to watch out for politicians who are going to take advantage of this partisan politics potential to create tension and take advantage, and how we have to seek the good of the country over our own local interests. And, of course, that will bring us to issues like, well, how much debt can we actually take it? How would we look at going to war? How do we prevent ourselves from fighting unnecessary battles? How does our religious heritage keep us united? And how do we look to the future in a way that we're going to actually see what we're doing as something that can survive? Those are all the kind of issues that Washington was concerned. But the basic issue, in my humble opinion, for Washington was, how do we keep the Union? How do we keep the Constitution intact? And how do we do that in the face of unavoidable and almost certain partisan politics, which Washington always hated? He said, I hope there won't be political parties, but he saw it coming. And so it was actually a testament for the ages.
Yeah, interesting. And as I recall, it's been a while since I've read the entire speech, but I remember there's a lot of mention of the word factions, as I recall.
Yes, he saw the fact that factions or partisan spirits pulling people in different directions had many reasons and ways for them to actually find power. one of the theories that he had of political power is that if you can find a division and exploit it, you actually create a power base for yourself. And then that becomes something that becomes self-interested. And that aggrandizes an individual, but actually weakens the country. And he says that's the danger of partisan politics. Well, it's what we see everywhere around us right now. Exploit a difference, make yourself essential, and then elevate yourself and do it in a way that siphons out wealth and power from others for your own benefit. And that's what he wanted to avoid. He said, how do we keep the broader unity of the country intact? Factions, self-interest, debt, war, money, power. He said, it's all going to work to divide the country.
Isn't this fascinating? It sounds like Americans need to rediscover this speech. Let's talk about debts. I mean, this is on the front page of the news even right now, the ongoing battles in Congress and the Senate, particularly about, funding the government, and that involves getting further into debt.
Yep. Well, so Washington realized we needed a federal government because you have to pay a nation's debts, and most often those debts were created by war. They just had a revolutionary war. It was very expensive. They had to rebuild the country, to start a new government. And so he's very careful to say, avoid entangling alliances. Let's not get involved in the wars that Europe has. We're far away, because he knew the moment you get into war, you're going to have to start borrowing money to build armaments. You're going to destroy property. It's going to be costly. You have to raise an army. You have to pay for soldiers. So he wanted to avoid creating debt by avoiding unnecessary wars. He wanted to avoid debt by making commerce, international commerce, the great way that America would engage the world, because he saw business as actually creating peace, because you're trading, and it would also create the potential of taxes. He says, nobody likes to pay taxes, but you can't have a government without taxes. So what's the best way to get taxes? To have healthy businesses. So everybody's earning good income, and off of that, taxes can be paid, and that's, instead of going into debt, you're making the country to become more successful. And so he saw war as a danger, commerce is a great success, debt is the specter looming over it, and taxes is the way to prevent debt, and it would be best to do it by not borrowing, but by having successful business. And then in the middle of all of that, he said, it is immoral for us to go into debt in this generation so that we put the debt on future generations.
Oh.
He saw the need for us to assume each generation its own responsibility to pay off its debts as quickly as it could. And so if you would put it this way, Washington was a fiscal conservative. He was a non-interventionist. He was a pro-business international investor. You can see where he would have fit on the spectrum today. He would say, stay away from wars unless you got to fight them, because they're going to be costly. Let business do the best job. It'll make friends. It'll make income. That's where taxes will come. And make sure if you go into debt, you don't do the unjust thing of saying the unborn are going to pay for it. Pay for it now. Be faithful and get out of debt and be a healthy nation. He said that will preserve your freedom. That will preserve your independence and also your unity.
When you said the unborn are going to pay for it, you're referring to those yet to be born. But of course, nowadays, with the widespread use of abortion in modern America, there's almost a double meaning to that. Not that that was intended.
Yeah, that's well said. I think what we would say, the unborn generations, those who are yet to be born, should not be saddled with a debt from the past.
Boy,
we need to
so
be responsible
true.
For it.
Yeah, so, just listening to you, in some ways, it almost makes me feel like, well, maybe one of the great presidents overlooked, perhaps in all of history, going beyond George Washington, of course, was Calvin Coolidge. I mean, here's a guy that kind of modeled after some of those very things you were just saying about George Washington's advice.
Yeah, he was one of the great conservatives. I'm not an expert in his administration, but he basically saw those same principles as essential for a healthy nation. So if we put what Washington said into our context today, we can see how America has now moved from being a small little new nation to actually a world power. And we can't run from our position of strength, but we realize every time we intervene somewhere in the world, that's billions of dollars, and where does it come from? From taxpayers. Yeah. How are we going to pay for it? Well, we're going to have to borrow it. Well, where are we going to borrow it from? Well, it's going to be pushed off on the national debt that's going to be in years to come for people who aren't even alive yet to pay for it. Or we can turn around and say, let's make sure that we unleash business and give it the best possibility to prosper so it can make tremendous income, jobs, and security for people. And all those profits, make sure that they are able to pay, as well as the people paying their taxes, which are never pleasant. But if they are on the basis of a good business environment, eventually, with fiscal stewardship and responsibility, avoiding wars that are expensive, we'll begin to pay down our debt. And that means that we'll be a secure nation. That's what Washington was saying for us. It still is relevant today as when he said it back then.
Do you think Washington was more of a servant-type statesman as opposed to a self-aggrandizing politician? I mean, obviously, this question is so loaded, but I think, obviously, the answer is the former. But I think it's important for people to realize some of this. A lot of people don't realize some of these details. How was George Washington a servant leader?
Well, first of all, because of his Christian heritage that he had, he realized that Jesus' teaching was that I'm showing you, even though I'm the Lord of all, I've come to be your servant. That servant leadership is the model in the historic Judeo-Christian tradition. That's why we call positions of leadership administration. It means ministering towards something. Mm. The ministry of defense, that kind of language, is that you are actually serving others for their benefit. Out of your wealth, or your success, your wisdom, you're taking your great gifts and you're trying to help others through your service. So that was the ideal. Now, Washington understood this so much that his standard conclusion when he would finish his letter was not yours truly or sincerely, it was your humble and obedient servant. He signed that thousands of times through his life. He was basically saying, I'm not in it to be famous, I'm here to serve. Obviously, he wanted to succeed like anybody else, and he wanted his position of leadership to be respected. But he saw what he was doing as always benefiting what he called the good of the great whole. He said, we must avoid sectional interest or, let's say, self-interested or selfish activities, but we should always be asking, even when I'm trying to do business, is it good for my community? Is it good for my nation? So as a leader, that was his principle. What is good for everybody, not just what's good for me or my community or my state? I have to make a hard decision. Is it good for the whole community? Is it good for everyone? So he was trying to think in terms of self-success, but also community success as well, and then ultimately national success. That was his model. So he was a servant. And as I say, he signed his letters that way again and again. You're humble, an obedient servant.
Yeah, and most people are not aware at all, and we'll close on this, but go ahead and explain about that time before the Constitution was even written and he became the first president under the Constitution when his troops wanted to make him king.
Well, it's interesting. At Newburgh, New York, at the end of the Revolutionary War, they realized victory was secured. And his officers come to him, and basically, with the whole history of Western world behind him, they said, we're going to be your new nobility. The spoils of war belongs to us. You will be the new King George, and we're going to serve you. Let's take over. Congress hasn't paid us. We've got the guns. Victory is ours. And Washington said, absolutely not. I didn't fight a war with a king to become a king. The people are going to choose their leaders. And in our army, we are not going to take positions in some unjust way. Rather, we're going to do it in a way of respect and order. So Washington, therefore, is stepping down as the general. When he came back to Congress, he turned in his commission. When he went back home as a private citizen. So he honored Congress, and he basically showed to his soldiers and to the Congress that there would be a peaceful transition of power and that power would be exercised by the rule of the people, entrusting to their elected leader how the country would go. Washington is the reason that we have, if you will, representative government that works. the man with all the power and fame humbled himself to be a servant of the nation and said, you choose your leaders and we'll follow your will. That's why our Constitution was able to work, because Washington gave that idea of the peaceful transition of power. Each leader serves his people, and then he steps down for the next to serve after him.
Dr. Peter Loback, providenceforum.org, for more information. Thank you so much for being with us.
Great to be with you.